Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
And they would serve things, this is no joke, with like a little paper squeeze cup of Cheese Whiz.
Where was this?
And I was just dumbfounded and was going to start making fun of it a little bit. But until I looked around and everybody there was actively enjoying their Cheese Whiz.
Now, what were they putting the Cheese Whiz on?
All their breakfast items.
What state was this?
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah, up northern Minnesota.
So they didn't give you your own can. They gave you a...
like a little individual squeeze paper thing full of Cheese Whiz.
But they were they making their own, or these are like produced?
I think they were like craft supply.
Oh, okay, this is legitimate.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, this is a great cold open to the Bear Grease Render. Great,
the Cheese Whiz Render.
The Cheese Whiz Render. Man, do we ever have an eclectic group of people here today? You know, so I'm not going to introduce, you may have recognized their voices, but I'm not going to introduce you for a minute. I'm going to tell you guys, though, I've got to warn you that you will be scrutinized heavily by the original Bear Grease crew, okay? So my wife, Misty Newcomb, Brent Reeves, Josh Lambridge, Spillmaker, Gary Believer Newcomb.
That Brent Reeves is sharp.
Yeah, man.
He's sharp.
Yeah. Well, see,
I'm not saying the other people aren't.
So occasionally, just the way it works is occasionally, if I'm traveling or something and I have a new Bear Grease Render crew, the next time I see all these people, they're like, you know, they were okay. Or they'll be like, yeah, that guy was this or that. So I'm just warning you.
You okay? can wind up in a somewhat, like, I think it might be like a somewhat postmodern situation or something where the render becomes about the render.
Yeah. 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 We've been accused of that, actually. We've been accused of that.
That's how about so the meta. Original Bear Grease crew you only referred to as the Chicharrones?
They're rendered out, dude.
I think it would be the Cracklins.
The Cracklins.
More southern appropriate.
That's right. The Cracklins. The Rands.
Yeah, there we go. No, hey, it is fantastic to have a very new crew. To my right, Phil Taylor.
Hey, how's it going, Clay?
Everybody would know Phil from the Meat Eater podcast. And if you don't, if you wouldn't know Phil from that, you would know Phil from all the incredible work he does on Bear Grease. Phil and I work on Bear Grease. You know, we coordinate together with how it's built. And so Phil Taylor, the sound engineer for Meat Eater.
Hello.
He gets like about a sentence in every podcast, but we have hundreds of them. Added up, there's paragraphs of
on the Meat Eater podcast.
There's paragraphs of Phil.
Impactful, you know what? Meaningful Phil.
We need to make a sizzle reel of everything Phil says.
Everything Phil has ever said strung out.
I do not want to hear that.
You'd have to be the one that makes it.
Yeah, I know. It's never going to happen.
Well, what I've learned from being around Phil, when he does speak, it's noteworthy.
I try. I don't like it when people talk too much at me, so I try not to talk too much at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
Don't talk at me.
Yeah. To your right, Ryan Callahan. Man, this is it's an honor to have you here, brother.
Hey, I've been looking forward to this.
Steve, Ryan and I have really never done much together. Of all the Meat Eater people, I've, you know, traveled a lot with Giannis, with you.
I've actually wondered about that.
Yeah, we've just never crossed paths much. Huh. And so,
are you guys getting along okay?
Yeah, man. You know,
it's probably because if you got me to Arkansas, I wouldn't come back.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we're brothers from another mother. You can tell by the stashes. Yeah.
He's got mules. He's got gardens. He's got lots of fishing and hunting opportunity. It's a pretty sweet deal right out your front door.
Yeah, it is. To your right, Steve Ranella. Man, now you're a regular on Bear Grease. I'm going to call you a regular if you've been on there more than twice.
That's fair.
So, but good to have you on the Render. So the Render, for those who might not know the structure of the podcast, it's a little bit different. So we have, and this isn't for you guys, this is for people out there. I try every now and then to kind of tell what's going on. So the Bear Grease podcast is our documentary style podcast with a very specific target. And we really dive in deep with multiple guests and voiceover and soundscapes and really do it up. The Bear Grease Render is what you're hearing here, which is us talking about the previous week's Bear Grease podcast. So if this is your first time to listen to Bear Grease, you know, go back one and you'll hear what we're going to talk about today, which is the Jerry Clower episode. But
yeah, like the Bear Grease podcast is like all the really informed, correct stuff.
Pretty much.
And then you do this and it's things that weren't well thought enough to make it into that.
Yeah. And you have, I would imagine you have some suggestions for the Jerry Clower podcast.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I anticipate these. To your right, our last guest and much of an honor to have you here, Corinne Schneider.
Thank you, Clay. Thank you.
And a lot of you would know Corinne from the Meat Eater podcast as well. Your first time on Bear Grease.
It is my first time.
Yeah. So Corinne is, tell us what you do, Corinne.
I produce the Meat Eater podcast. So a lot of pre-interviews and setting up the agenda of talking points.
Yeah.
And transitions.
Yep. Keeping Steve in line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Before
tracking
we get into
down.
I learned there's two things that you don't bring up in life this week on my Instagram. Okay. There's certain topics that if you bring them up on Instagram, it's just going to be problems for you. Number one, beekeeping.
Okay.
Oh, really? Those people are touchy?
Yeah. They are very touchy.
I need to add that to
the long list of touchy enthusiast groups.
Is it worse than like the
people that like the dog?
Oh, man. Okay. So I've got two things. The beekeeping thing is something that happened a long time ago, but I quickly saw that it fit into the thing that I did this week that may have been a mistake. But beekeeping, Misty has a couple of beehives, and she's an amateur. She knows it. Last year sometime, I thought it was pretty cool. She was pulling out some of the screens and looking at honey. So I took a video, put it on my Instagram. Biggest mistake of my life. Beekeepers, holy moly. They can look at a 3-second video clip and like look into your soul
yeah.
to tell you why you know you're bad at life, bad at bees, wow. bad at
holy.
If you get a second, I'd like to speak to that to the touchy enthusiast audience.
Well, let me tell you the next one. Yeah. That's probably it's close. Hoof trimming. Of mules.
Yeah, oh, sure.
You can shoot farrier stuff.
But I saw that thing and I was like, looked like he knew what he was doing.
Well, so did I, Steve. Man, no, I am not a I'll tell you my full experience with trimming and I put my shoes on mules. I don't shoe them very often. But, you know, when I got mules, I started paying farriers to come to your house and it's $150 and you got to do it every 6 to 8 weeks. And
no.
you sit there. Oh yeah, man, it's a big deal.
I didn't know it was that. I thought it was a couple times a year.
Oh, typically
it depends on who you are.
Typically 6 to 8 weeks. Like in talking to the farriers, they're like, because when the first guy started coming out, and their farriers are always great people. They really are. I've never met a farrier I didn't like.
They got to deal with a lot of people.
They do, and they're just you can't fake out a horse or a mule.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just kind of have to be. Legit, and they seem
yeah, they're
to
always like one
through.
Kick away from being mentally disabled,
and most of them have been kicked.
Yeah.
And
bad
now,
backs.
This guy,
it's
so
a bad
this guy,
back profession.
He told me, he said, Clay, I said, do I really need to, you know, shod this? At the time, I had a horse, actually. Don't tell anybody I ever owned a horse, but I had a horse, and I was like, do I really need to shoe this thing every 6 weeks? And he just said, Clay, people that are really dialed in on their equine business. Absolutely shoe every 6 to 8 weeks. And so I said, okay. But he basically just showed me what he was doing, and I watched him 2 or 3 times, and I was like, I think I can do that. And he was like, heck yeah, you can do it. And he just showed me how to do it. And so I started doing it, primarily not even financially as much as it's a pain in the rear to schedule somebody to come 6 weeks in advance to your house, and you know, you may not be there when they show up because you forgot about it or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I started trimming my mule feet, which if you're running them on rocks and rough stuff, the feet kind of trim down on their own. But man, I put up that little video just because I thought it was kind of cool. And you know, apparently I was using the knife backwards, which I mean, come on.
There's a sharp side.
There's a right-handed and a left-handed hoof knife, and I had two of them there, and I just pick up whichever one's closest, and it doesn't seem to be a limiting factor in what I'm doing, but oh man, they went off on me pretty good. So
yeah. So are you aware of Dr. Pimple Popper?
Oh man,
no.
Okay, this is a huge thing for some people. I cannot stand it, but it's like what
I know
it sounds.
I know who Cal's referring to,
and it's a huge following, but this same, and it's on people, right? And this. Persons or whatever, they're plucking hairs, they're popping zits,
they're
doing
spaghetti, squeezing it out.
There's very gnarly stuff, but this whole thing also exists in the agriculture community to where you can watch these lengthy videos with millions of views of people working on abscess jaws, you know, pus, you know, getting all the pus out of an abscess jaw, and then doctoring feet is a big thing.
Oh really?
Yep. Yeah. And so these people,
and we're talking about horses here, just to be clear, correct?
We're talking about the whole gamut
of hooved
got animals. Okay. Yep. And so that's who you're dealing with. Okay, so you just hold your head up high and know that you're dealing with a bunch of people with weird foot fetishes. Okay? And at the base of their complaints, they just want to see more, Clay.
Yeah, that is probably the best advice I've had. And I know that there are very professional ways, but to do stuff. Here's my pretty strong philosophy that I have in life, though, that has worked out okay for me, is that if you take your instruction from the absolute experts in any field, and they set the bar for entry for you, you will likely be intimidated and never even get into that. Like I am a master at very few things, but good enough at quite a bit of stuff. And trimming mule feet would be one of the things that I'm not a master at, but good enough, you know? And there's so much that I think people get hung up in the details that really aren't the limiting factor of their entry point into something.
Sure, yeah.
And the bar's a lot lower. And but obviously, you're going to go to the experts to learn how to do stuff. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's paralysis of fear, right? They're like, oh, I'm going to make a mistake, so I'm not even going to try.
Yeah.
And you got to try.
Yeah.
You got to get in there some way and do it. And in your case, man, if you... got in a situation where you go a little too thin,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden you got a bum foot on your mule, you're going to feel like crap and you're going to be ultra careful, but it's not going to lead into this.
They call that quicken a horse or a mule.
Cutting it too quick.
I've done it one time and Izzy just had a sore foot for about 2 weeks. And I learned from it.
And like, you look at that deep, and you're like, it makes me sad. Right. Yeah. Right, yeah. And you're way more careful the next time, but the world didn't end.
Yep.
Didn't have to shoot the mule.
Didn't have to.
Right.
Steve, what are your thoughts on these type of people?
The enthusiast groups?
Yeah.
Sensitive, touchy enthusiast groups?
Yeah.
I'm less excited about telling you now that you gave the farrier example, because I would not put farriers in the touchy enthusiast group thing.
Gotcha.
But a lot of things, like beekeeping. Now, this is going to insult all your beekeepers out there. Now, I'm not opposed to beekeeping. In fact, me and my brother Danny one time sawed a bee tree open, which is probably bad. But we were clearing a lot. Sawed a bee tree open. Tree had to go anyway.
Mm. Did you get the honey?
Well, kind of.
It's a long story.
We didn't do it. We didn't get a centrifuge out and get it out, but we dabbled.
Yeah. Had some bar and chain oil in there. Some
bugs. So, yeah, it was like, we're in high school. Anyways, it is, apologies to everyone, it's like a little trendy to have some bees.
Sure.
So
why do you think we have them?
So it's like a new thing. And you have people that previously probably didn't have a strong identity. And now they've found an identity. Okay? They found an identity. They used to just be like a person that they're like, they have some shows they like and they like to drink certain things. And then all of a sudden they get like, they identify, like they make 20 batches of beer and all of a sudden now they have an identity.
Right.
And it impacts them deeply. When you're getting that kind of feedback, you're getting feedback from people who've made a new identity.
You don't think any of these comments are coming from people who have been keeping bees for decades, maybe, and are gatekeeping and kind of like, nope, stay out of my lane.
No. Let's say you had a video where you're like, here's how I've decided to feedlot cattle. This is how I'm going to fatten my cattle. Do you think that a guy who's been in the cattle fattening business for 6 generations, biggest cattle fattener in Kansas,
is he going to care?
Is he going to be like, no, Clay, I find that when I'm fattening cattle, no.
Yeah, he's going to be.
He's like, who cares?
He's like, this is a guy that's going to fail and my cattle.
It's like the world's full of people who don't know how to fatten cattle.
You know, I'm not going to go into detail, but yesterday we were discussing a plan to get Steve an alternate identity on the internet just so he can make comments like these.
Because I have to. Yeah, but here's the thing, too. And then I'm done with this whole thing. Yesterday, our dinner guest, dinner mate, whatever you call him, was saying how online haters are always unsuccessful. Mm. They're unsuccessful and unfulfilled in some way.
I wonder, I like statements like this.
Because it makes you feel good.
Well, no. I like definitive statements that probably aren't entirely true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that statement, I guess you have to define what successful is, but yeah, it people hating on the internet, it's a tough crowd to diagnose in terms of like what's their motivation.
You guys want to hear a quick t-shirt idea?
Let's do it.
Okay. Honeybee sitting there on a chunk of clover maybe with a bird dog on full point on the honeybee.
Trimming a mule foot.
And it says, STE, sensitive, touchy enthusiast.
Okay. I like it. Well, I just thought I would bring that up because I'm going to keep trimming my mule feet. I've got to. Just got no choice, Corinne.
Yeah, so just do it. Put it out there.
I imagine you got like the stall for holding their feet up and stuff, so you're not just bent over the whole time.
No,
right?
Man, I'm doing like a lot of farriers do. Just put it up in between your legs and work it.
A lot of farriers have bad backs, buddy.
Yeah. I don't. It's not like I'm doing it every day, you know.
Right.
Once every couple of months.
You know what, Clay? I got to tell you one last thing about that. That I saw that video. And
are you going to join the criticism?
No. Okay. I don't know. Dude, like, I have zero opinions on the subject. Other than that, like, I have two friends that do that, but I never watched them do it.
Yeah.
But I was watching, and it looked to me such confidence and fluidity that I thought it must not be you.
Oh, really?
Oh,
man. I thought it must be you filming your farrier.
I see.
At first, I was like, oh, Clay's doing this to a horse's foot. And then I was like, that can't be Clay. He's never said he's like way into that. And I was like, it must be Clay's farrier.
Man, if you watched a real farrier, they would be like so much more. And that's what the guys that were hacking on me, one guy was like, yeah, I remember what my first beer was like. That was his literal quote. Like he could say, like, yeah, you hadn't done this that much, which is true.
Right.
I mean,
but like,
you know,
the tone of the comment, like, maybe it'd be different if it were
I'm looking for something a little more encouraging.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, like, some pointers, maybe some, you know, education.
Well, maybe
you don't
just
need to
keep your mouth shut.
Well, that is my favorite part, though. It's like, if you are the authority, here is a beautiful opportunity to interact with a bunch of people and give them something to go home with out of the whole depth of experience that you have packed into your brain. But instead, what you say is, go F yourself. Right? And it's like, oh, so is that going to make people gravitate towards your intelligence to come find you the authority on this subject? It's like, nope.
Nobody wants to have your grump spread around.
Right? Meanwhile,
just leave it be.
Clay, who's not the end point of experience on the hoof trimming scale, is going to have a line out the front door because he's a nice person. He's going to take the time to talk to you.
My wife thinks hoof trimming is extremely gross.
Why?
She watched me do it one time, and it does smell. Like, it has a smell. Like, it's not necessarily a bad smell. It's just a distinct, hoof.
Like,
kind of like when you...
Toenail, nail burn.
Yeah, like when you, like, grind a bone or cut bone with a saw, you have that bone smell. It's kind of like that, but...
Real quick. You need to shod horses when they're like, particularly when they're going to be traveling on rocky ground.
Right.
Go back to the American West 200 years ago, where people are traveling long distances. They're away from any kind of settlements, civilizations. Are they just not doing it? Obviously, the horse mounted Plains Indian hunters were riding unshod horses.
Sure.
But they're on rocky
ground.
That is a
question that I've never really heard someone concisely answer, but I'll tell you my understanding of it. In modern times, the modern breeding of our horses, they pretty much have to be shod if they're going to be used extensively. Just the hoof structure, they just stay together. Their feet stay together so much better if they're shod.
So those guys might have just burned them out quicker.
Yep, I think so. And, you know, I mean, if you're talking about the Plains Indians and the horses that they had, I mean, they were consciously or unconsciously selectively breeding for animals that had strong hooves, you know. But obviously wild horses weren't shod. But, you know, there are some horses that, I mean, can't even walk through a flat pasture without shoes on. And it's just their
like
foot
me.
Structure. Yeah, just like us.
Being from the north.
There's also, you know, some people say if you never shoe them, you know, by shoeing them, you're creating a process that you have to continue, kind of like us wearing shoes. Like, if you never wore shoes, you wouldn't need shoes. there's a fine line, and a lot of it has to do with the specifics of that animal. But that's also one of the reasons I love mules, is for what I do with mules, I pretty much never have to shoe them. Now, I was in Arizona 2 weeks ago with Warner Glenn out there, and they have to shod their mules all the time just because they're walking on Malpais, volcanic rock all the time, constantly. So, I mean, there, Warner told me, he said, yeah, mule, you could ride an unshod mule in this country for one day, and then you'd have to put it up in a stall for 2 days, and then you could ride it again on the fourth day, you know. And so they shoe them all and don't have any trouble.
Hmm.
But yeah, the whole shoeing thing's pretty wild.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
You do read some stuff about like rawhide foot protection for horses back in the day.
That's a real thing?
I've read some references to it, yeah. But I don't know. But I think the burnout factor is a huge one, because you read about the size of the horse herds for a lot of the plains tribes. Were immense.
Mm, yeah.
You know, immense, immense. So I don't think anybody was, our idea of having an animal, like that's my go-to, I don't think was right. A thing.
Yeah. Man, I got to say this before we start talking about Jerry Clower, bringing up Warner Glenn and mules. Warner Glenn, 86 years old, lives in Arizona, cowboy, dry ground line hunter. We hunted with him for 4 days. And on the first day, we rode in stuff that was the most treacherous, like wildest mule stuff I've ever been in, pretty much by far. And you're going out with this 86-year-old man, and you think, you know, I'd never ridden with him extensively. So I was like, we're probably going to kind of go easier places just based upon the man's age. And there were a bunch of us because there was a crew there. And at one point, the dogs went over this big mountain, and Warner said, okay, y'all go around, and me and Clay are going to go just follow the dogs. And so we went up something that was just wildly steep, boulders, limbs. Just, it was the most treacherous half mile of mule riding I've ever done. That night, when we got back home over dinner, I said, Mr. Warner, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being riding down a gravel, flat gravel road, 10 being the absolute hardest mule ride you've ever done in your life, what did we do today? And he said, oh, it was about an 8 or a 9. he said, the reason being, if it was any worse, you just couldn't have gone. And what he said to me, and I'll never forget it, and I kind of would have known this, but by him saying it, it kind of stamped it on me. He just said, if your mule will go, just ride it and go. He said, your mule will tell you when it's too much. And I mean, pretty much you're limited by just where that animal will go. If you spur it and it goes, it's not going to get itself into a situation that's going to hurt it. Now, it could hurt you. You could fall off. You could get raked off by a limb. You could, you know, bad stuff could happen to you. But that animal's going to be all right. So it was a pretty, pretty exciting time.
So you can't spur a mule off a cliff's edge.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's why that's their whole thing.
Have you done much riding at night?
A little bit. Probably not as much as some of these guys coming way back from backcountry.
Yeah. I mean, that's a wild, wild thing, man.
It's not like, having your light on?
Yeah. So you don't have your headlamp on, so the mule can see better. And yeah, you get that like feeling of floating sometimes, and you're just like super dark nights and cross rivers, up and down drainages, and they're doing is heading for home, and they kind of quicken up the pace the closer you get, and it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
But you get some real confidence in them.
Yeah.
But there's also those zones with low hanging branches.
Yeah, that's treacherous.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives. And the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time. Seafoam motor treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. You pour it in your gas tank. Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a gobbling turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
Speaking of mules, Jerry Clower loved mules. He was
That was a Corinne Schneider transition right there. Mm-hmm.
He was big into mules.
Odell him a mule.
Yeah. Yeah. he had the one where he was with a New York City music executive and he shot the mule, Uncle Versi's mule.
He was laid by 26 crops with her.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, okay. So we've been doing a 2-part series on the cultural impact of the book Where the Red Fern Grows. And the way that I described it was that one time that coon hunting, this super niche, small scale hunting related thing, did a 360 slam dunk on pop culture and made them love it. All right. And that's the truth. I mean, that book is just so widespread to this day, used across the country in urban areas. I always thought it was kind of a regional phenomena because, you know, I live about an hour from Tahlequah where that book happened. So we did that. Somebody wrote me and I got to give him credit, and I don't even know who it was, and said, "Hey, you ought to do something on Jerry Clower." And I don't want to, we could get into the details of how I know about Jerry Clower, which we will. Steve has a few things to say about
whether
that.
Whether you like it or not.
But very quickly, so the render, part of the render is seeing behind the scenes of the Bear Grease podcast. We didn't have this planned out for a long time. If we had, I'd have had my friend Steve Rinella talk about Jerry Clower, because apparently he's an expert on Jerry Clower. We put this together relatively quickly. And so my friend Isaac Neal, who helps me with some Bear Grease stuff, I was in Arizona, and I said, "Isaac, when I come home on Monday, I have got to have an expert about Jerry Clower that I've got to get an audio recording in like 2 days from when I get home." When I got, he was messaging me, and what he scoured the internet, called Jerry's old manager, and couldn't get in touch with him. And so he called the city council office of Liberty, Mississippi.
Hmm.
Calls him on the phone, city council, and he tells them, hey, we're trying to find a Jerry Clower expert. They give him the cell phone number of the mayor of Liberty, Mississippi, which he calls and leaves a message with the mayor of Liberty, Mississippi. Within 3 hours, he gets a call from John Newman, Jerry Clower's neighbor from East Fork, Mississippi.
That's some good
so
producing
Jerry lived
there.
In East Fork. and so Isaac's like, Clay, we got Jerry Clower's neighbor. And I hadn't talked to John. So I didn't know much about him. I said, you know, what's he like? Is he excited to do this? Like, what's the extent of his knowledge of Jerry? And, you know, he said, man, he seems pretty legit, pretty excited. And so I called John, and just a deep Southern accent, just like Jerry. You know, I find these regions have, obviously, like a Mississippi accent would sound a certain way. If you're from Arkansas, you sound a certain way. But it's very regional. One time, Steve, you'd like this story. When I was in college, first day of some big college class, when you're in this big auditorium, I sat down in the seat and I heard a guy two chairs behind me talking. And I turned around, but I didn't look at him. I didn't know who he was. I turned around and I said, you're from Gurdon, Arkansas. And he was from Gurdon, Arkansas. And I'd recognized his accent in a heartbeat because I had a friend from Gurdon, Arkansas. Just immediately I picked it up. I say that to say the accent of the South is varied, extremely varied. But
not when you're a Yankee.
Yeah. Maybe so.
You're from down there.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. But East Fork, Mississippi. It was 8 hours from my house, so I drove to East Fork, Mississippi, and met John Newman.
Huh.
And
can I give just a little bit of color commentary?
Yeah.
On Liberty, Mississippi, 728 would be the population. So
okay.
The mayor is the mayor of what is known as a micropolitan area.
12 miles east of Macomb, Mississippi. I think Macomb, Mississippi, as Jerry says it, is the big town.
But Liberty is the county seat of Amity.
Nope. Amit.
Amit?
Oh, yep. They'll nail you.
Oh, Amit River Swamps.
Amit River.
A-M-I-T-E.
Emphasis on the A.
Yeah,
Amit River.
I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of Jerry Clower stuff takes place in the Amet River Swamp.
Yes. Yeah. So Steve, what's your connection to Jerry Clower?
You know, I thought about it long and hard after. Can I first tell my problem?
Yes.
My problem is I like right when I knew you liked hunting raccoons, I was telling you, y'all listen to Jerry Clower. Now I listen.
Now, did you think
I was listening to Jerry Clower before you were born? So
you remember when you were talking about bees and just thinking the same thing?
So the fact that you would do the Jerry Clower thing, and not even, and I would have to find out about it through Phil.
I could see how that'd be really hurtful.
So I'll tell you I thought about it, like, what was my initial Jerry Clower touch point? It was this. I could actually put, I could go back home and conduct some interviews, and I could probably find out the exact year, because I know where my bus stop was at the time. My bus stop was 1 mile from my house. And it was...
Can you do this in a Jerry Clower style?
Okay.
1 mile from...
I will.
You need three compass directions.
Uh-huh. 1 mile east of where Duff Road and Strail Road came together.
Okay.
It was, yeah, I could do all that.
Yeah.
You could if you had time.
Triangulation.
It was, we had to walk that far to the bus stop because they needed to have a certain amount of visual clearance down the roads. And apparently, so for a while, they moved our bus stop to a horrible, faraway spot.
Mm.
Reason I say this, I heard a Jerry Clower story, and it was the one he tells about the little boy out on a moped or something. and a brand new, I can't remember what car, like some sports car pulls up next to him. And the little boy is like so curious about the car. The owner of the car rolls the window down. And the boy's got his nose in there and he's smelling the new leather and he's just so blown away. And the light turns green and the motorist decides to impress the little boy and just gun it out of the intersection. So he peels rubber out of the intersection, heads down the road. And a while later in his rearview mirror, he sees this little boy overtaking him on the moped and boom, past him. And a little while later, he comes back the other direction, boom, passes him. And while they're here, he sees him coming again. He's like, how is that boy going that fast? And smash into the car. And the guy gets out. And he's like, oh, is there anything I can do for you? And he's like, yes, sir, you can unhook my suspenders from the rear, from the side view mirror. So, and I remember going down to the bus stop.
You were tickled by that one when you were.
I remember going down to that bus stop at that bus stop in that spot. And telling people about it. And what it was my mom had been raised in a farm area outside of Chicago that became like, now it's like a big Chicago subdivision, Naperville, I think. She was a WGN listener because she liked Chicago Cubs. Even when she moved 4 or 5 hours away from Chicago up into Michigan, she would do anything possible to try to get WGN. So I grew up with WGN always playing. She liked the Cubs games, all that. Clower used to go, so this would have been I was born in 74. This has been like late 70s, early 80s. Clower would go on WGN and tell a story now and then. No one, like we knew about him, no one knew about him. As a point, it wasn't like a thing. It was like we had a very like specific entry into Clower, but we liked him a lot. So we probably had the 8 tracks at a time, but we had like Jerry Clower cassette tapes in the car, and my parents would find this stuff and buy it, and we would listen to Clower. And then even in all through like high school, all through college, within my like immediate group of friends, we would make Clower references all the time.
Really?
Yeah. If we were describing a tree, you'd be like, there wasn't a limb on it for a while, right?
Yeah.
And like we had all these Clower jokes we would run. Later when I was in graduate school, there's this novelist from Mississippi named Larry Brown from Oxford, Mississippi. And he kind of like took me under his wing a little bit and we became buddies, would go drinking together and stuff. He actually passed away early, had a heart attack when he was young. I was like, oh, one day we're just talking. And I said to Larry Brown, I'm like, you're from Mississippi. Have you ever heard of the guy, Jerry Clower? Not only that, he hung out with Jerry Clower. And that's what made me think that you, like the Mississippi people, Southern people, whatever, like somehow all know each other.
Yeah.
And Larry Brown would talk about how he was friends with Jerry. We'd talk about how Jerry had a rule for himself that he wouldn't tell a story on stage, on a radio show, that he wouldn't feel comfortable standing up in front of his church and telling.
Yeah.
And what, Clower died in 98?
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't too terribly much longer that Larry Brown died. But that was the first person outside of my immediate circle that I ever encountered that knew who that guy was.
So my biggest question was how big of a national phenomena Jerry Clower was, because he was on the Grand Ole Opry, which would have had, you know, a national presence. But I talked to Dr. Brooks Blevins, who is kind of a Ozarks regional expert, and I just kind of pitched an email to him like, hey, what do you know anything about Jerry Clower? He knows quite a bit about other Southern cultural related stuff. And his comment to me was that he felt like Clower was kind of a regional phenomena. And you know, he acknowledged that he would have been known at the wider scale, but, you know, obviously the hub of his, his base was clearly the South. But Clower also talked about traveling up in the Northeast and telling stories. He actually, in one of the books, he has a book called Stories from Home, and it really was just a transcription of a big, long interview they did with him. And he talked about when he was in the South, he could tell stories just real freely without explanation of stuff.
Sure.
And when he was anywhere else, his stories would be longer because he would say something like boiled okra, and he would have to qualify it.
Or the raccoon tapped a tree.
Yeah.
Then he got where he had to explain the terms for everybody.
Well, just hearing you say that I was surprised. I actually considered texting you that week that we were building this, which was just last week. And I was going to say, do you know who Jerry Clower is? And I do remember. I remember now you telling me that. Yeah. Yeah, I do remember you telling that.
If you want to increase the number, like, you might say to someone, do you know who Jerry Clower is? They're going to say no. Then say to them this. Imagine back to when you were a kid. Do you remember a magic bait commercial in which a man said, it'll fling a craven on him? Speaking of magic, the use of magic bait will fling a craven onto catfish. That is Jerry Clower.
So he did a commercial for that company.
And it was like magic bait. It'll fling a craven on him. That's Jerry. That was Jerry Clower's voice.
Mm.
And that'll get a lot of people will be like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
It'd be like, you remember the guy, the milk guy, Vern and all that. What the hell is that guy's name?
I don't remember.
Yeah. You could say like, hey, do you remember his name?
People I wasn't born when a lot of your life happened.
It sounds so funny too, because what you're talking about, the intersection of the core demographic and where that core demographic overlaps with the magic catfish bait group. I think you may be giving it too much credit. Because the widespread phenomenon.
That had six people.
Yeah.
I got a buddy in Alabama who is just like your classic soft-spoken storytelling dude, and he knows his giant repertoire of Jerry Clower stories, but he'll just like slow roll them out for you, you know, and they're first person stories, right? And so after the very first one, you're like, oh, I get it, this is not your story. Mm-hmm. It's just a good story. But there's a great one about this kind of well-to-do gentleman. He's out there squirrel hunting, not doing very good. And here comes this boy up the road who's just obviously from a lower class society, right? Other side of the tracks. And he's got a bunch of squirrels hanging from his belt. But no.
This is the Clower story.
Yeah. No gun or anything. And he said, oh, son, looks like you're doing pretty good. And so, oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, all Clower stories are like very polite and talks, you know, addresses the squirrels on the kid's belt after giving him a spare apple. And they're talking about the squirrel season. And he says, well, son, I see you don't have a gun. He says, no, sir. I use a sling. Or just slings rocks at him.
He said, I just chuck rocks at him.
Just chuck rocks at him, yeah. And pretty soon a squirrel presents itself and the guy says, son, why don't you take a crack at that thing? And so I think like left-handed, he wings a rock up there, knocks a squirrel off the tree and ties another squirrel to his belt. And the gist of the story is like, oh man, and you're like, you're a lefty to boot or something like that. And the kid's like, oh no, sir. My papa won't let me use my right hand. I beat him up too much.
he said he had those squirrels tucked up under his belt, and it looked like a squirrel hula skirt. That's what he said. Yeah. You know, it had been a long time since I'd listened to Jerry Clower. And when I was driving to Amit County, Mississippi, I listened to him nonstop. On Spotify and Amazon Music, they have Jerry Clower's Greatest Hits. They have Possums, Peaches and Possums. Mm-hmm. So there's different albums. And then they have Clower Power. So there's three albums.
There's some deep cuts on Spotify too, though. Or maybe No. You can find some deep cuts maybe on YouTube, but I feel like there's some deep cuts on Spotify.
When you say there's more, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like hidden gems.
Yeah.
Deep cuts is like a term for stuff no one knows about. B-sides and music.
I was actually kind of surprised to find it so easily on these main platforms.
It's amazing that it's out there.
Yeah. And I listened to them all the way
down. I bet if you went
and
asked the guys at Spotify, I bet they're not aware. If you met like the CEO of Spotify, I'm like, man, I really, you know, appreciate you guys got some clour up there. I doubt he's going to be like, oh yeah, that was a real negotiation.
Decision from the top.
Yeah.
All the way from the top. I think it's all those stories are so like wholesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's due for resurgence, right? Like all I do is read up to date, like periodical all day, every day. And it's amazing like how stories like that now trigger such an emotional response, because everything else, like you have to suck all the emotion out of it just to get through and be like, oh, bunch of people dying, but you know, the environment getting destroyed. And then you're like, he's actually right-handed. it's amazing. I love it.
You know, there were a couple of things that that did stand out to me. I would have never thought of Clower as intentionally like a clean comedian. I mean, like we just listened to him and it's just kind of like who he was. You didn't compare him up against somebody who was different than him.
Clower overlapped with George Carlin, Richard Pryor.
Okay, oh.
Right? Mm. I mean, folks that started... Mm. Mm-hmm. They were the ones who started cussing
like
in comedy.
Shock humor.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciated, going back in and reading his, and I don't know if it's the most in-depth, but you know, that book, Stories from Home, like he made a very intentional decision. And I said it on the podcast, 'cause I value stuff like that. When somebody has a strategy that is against the trend and they just do that strategy. And he said that somebody, a Hollywood exec or somebody that was, you know, over him said, hey man, you're going to have to be more risque if you want to be nationally known. And in his words, quote, he said, I defied them, you know, and he just stuck with who he was, you know, he didn't let it change him. And that's what I appreciate is he didn't let it change him. And man, that is what, I talked to John Newman for like 2 hours, and you probably heard maybe 26 minutes of John Newman talking about Jerry. And the main thing that he wanted to tell me was just what an incredible guy Jerry was, just mm-hmm. as a neighbor and a friend and the things he would do for you in private. So, I mean, he was just this genuine guy, but clearly a comedic genius. And what I asked John, I said, do you think Jerry was, and I knew the answer to this, I just kind of wanted to see what he would say. I said, how was Jerry influenced by the people around him? And I know the answer because I know the way that I talk and tell stories is 100%. I mean, I could track you, I could point it back to the people and different things that I do that, I mean, it's not like I'm trying to imitate them. Just you hear someone talk or you hear someone tell a story and it just that communication style, you identify with it and then you kind of adopt it in.
Yes. Yeah, you recognize that it's like it's effective.
It's an effective way.
Yeah.
It's even a cultural way to do something. And so you create this, you know, inside of your personality and the way you communicate, you tell stories. Man, Jerry had to have been surrounded by some big characters down there in the South. John didn't really, he just said, you know, a lot of Jerry's stuff was just natural, and which it certainly was. And he kind of came up with his own unique style. But man, I guarantee you those guys down there, they told stories like that. And the other thing, and I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts on it. Jerry is the one who said, I'm not a comedian. Somebody said Jerry wasn't as much a comedian as he was a humorist. And then the quote from Jerry Clower was, he said, I don't tell funny stories. I tell stories funny.
I know that exists, but I completely disagree.
I mean, he did tell funny stories, but I think what he was talking about was he always had the hook and the part of the story that was really funny, which was a funny story. But all the stuff up until that, like, I'm from East Fork, Mississippi, in Amit County, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, like, he's just, that's not funny stuff, but he told it funny. Mm-hmm. I think that's what he meant.
Yeah, no, I got you. But he, like, there's an interview where, I can't remember if it was Larry David or Jerry Seinfeld talking about the writing of Seinfeld, okay? And that they eventually realized that when someone goes somewhere, like, you can't have a scene in a bowling alley because something needs to happen there. He goes, they have to be in the bowling alley for a funny reason.
I see.
And then something funny can happen at the bowling alley. Everybody has to be somewhere for a funny reason.
I see.
Right? You don't just have it set for no reason in a bowling alley so that someone can meet someone's mom. It's like they go to the bowling alley for, and if you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, everywhere they go, like, they're already there for a funny reason. And then something funny happens.
There. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, Clower, I mean, probably my favorite Clower story is the guy that uses the monkey to hunt raccoons.
Yeah.
The monkey with the pistol and the flashlight.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, they're out. There's a funny punchline, but they're out in the swamp for a funny reason. Because a guy is like, I can kill more coons than anybody with this monkey than anyone with a dog. Right? So they're out in the swamp for a funny reason. Like, he follows, and he was doing this way before those guys were doing it. But I'm saying, like, he follows the
roadmap of comedy.
Yeah.
Well, he did it too.
He's like, it's like he is he's pioneering for sure. But he's definitely like has a hone. He's like a honed craft.
He's got a different approach, though, too. Okay, and I touched on this a bit last night, but it's like a fable, right? And he starts with like the basis of something, and he's like, oh, but wouldn't it be funny if it happened like this,
mm-hmm.
and this is the end result?
Sure.
So, when Norm Macdonald passed away, I was watching a lot of Norm Macdonald.
Oh, I'm still doing it.
And
I can't stop.
Like, Conan O'Brien posted this thing. He's like, the funniest guest was Norm Macdonald, and he laboriously tells this joke, and it's a joke that you've heard in some way before, and it's like a fly walks into like a barber shop and is telling the barber about all the bad things in his life and everything, and the barber's finally like, well, you know, next door is the therapist's office. And he says, I know. And he keeps telling him about it, and he says, no, next door is the therapist's office. He said, why are you in the barbershop? He said, well, because you had the light on. Right? So it was a moth, right? It was a moth. But Norm Macdonald tells it on live TV, and as if the whole other world only showed up to hear this, like, whatever story of his, and it's so belabored, and it is one of the funniest things I've seen in the telling. And so Clower kind of, you know, it wasn't his joke. He just built up the
world around it.
The world around it. And, and so Clower, like, everybody's heard this anecdotal joke of, you know, I always say, you know, a couple of guys sitting around, and go, oh, nice shot. And the other guy turns around and goes, should see me with my right hand or see me with my left hand, right?
Yep.
And it's like, that is the joke. We've all heard it a gajillion times, but you put it in the context of, like, two people from different worlds out in the squirrel woods bump into each other, have this moment together, and then should see me with my right hand.
Yeah. You know? He like could dress up. He could take like a simple joke and dress it up and put it in an 8-minute context. But like the one I mentioned earlier, the suspender thing, that's not telling a story funny.
Yeah.
It's a kid who got a suspend. It's like, it is funny.
Yeah. That was for sure.
In the
monkey with a pistol
the
and a
monkey
flashlight.
With a pistol and a flashlight isn't telling a story.
At the same
funny.
Time, though, I mean, he covers both. He's such a musical performer too. He's very dynamic. His the highs are high and the lows are low, and you have to kind of strain to listen. He draws you in and pushes you away and brings you back in.
Yeah.
Norm MacDonald, who's, you know, incredibly funny, has perfect timing. He's not dynamic in that way.
He's kind of very dry
and deadpan. Isn't that funny?
I just realized the two things I need to tell you. You can get around to me when you want, but to help me remember, McCulloch chainsaws.
Yeah.
And details. So, but say whatever you want.
Well,
just remember.
I was just going to say, I wanted to make a whole section about it on the podcast, but his sound effects. Mm-hmm. He when I listen to him, like, I start to laugh inside every time he goes, "Woo!" he kind of has a growly. "Woo!" He's got man in that coon. "Woo!" Came down that tree. I mean, you know, you just can't replicate that.
Yeah.
And you could tell it was so natural. And it was what the most fascinating thing. And I wouldn't have known this about Clower, you know, that he was 45 years old. He was a fertilizer salesman for Mississippi Chemical and was just a funny guy. I mean, he had built a whole life as just this country salesman.
He sounded like such a joyful spirit.
Yeah.
And maybe for all of those decades of his life, he soaked up a whole lot. I mean, honestly, I didn't grow up in a chicken coop. I grew up in a concrete box, and I had not heard of
New York City.
Yep, you exactly.
And somebody from Yazoo, Mississippi doesn't just show up in New York City, Corinne.
And just to follow up on that, my favorite part of the podcast, Clay, was listening to Brent Reeves recall him
meeting
their meeting.
Yeah,
he sounded wistful.
Yeah.
He got emotional. He remembered every tiny detail.
You a pretty boy. I'll never forget that.
That's the thing you cannot say to someone in the dorm. No.
You a pretty boy.
I'm like, yeah, I'll be taking off.
Corinne, what was your thought? Had you ever heard of Jerry Clower?
No, I had not. And my
shocker.
Totally surprising, right? My first interaction with his comedy was listening to your episode yesterday,
which I had to pause.
Right, and
Monkey. I had to pause it to play the monkey story.
Yeah.
And I was cackling. I mean, it was just his delivery, his spirit. It just hearing him was so feel good and so funny. I was driving while listening, and it was probably a dangerous situation because the okra line about he eats so much okra that
he couldn't keep his socks up.
People
in his county were too poor to sin.
I don't know, you know, the delivery, the energy, the everything, even if not necessarily relatable. It seemed maybe after, you know, starting late in his life that he perhaps had already solidified to a great degree his confidence in himself, his sense of who he was, and that his comedy was maybe so good because it was him being him and relaying stories in a funny way, or funny stories from the entirety and the breadth of his experience. I just found it so delightful.
You know, him being 45 too, our dinner guest last night, who was a comedian, he said that confidence is such an important part of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Just being confident in who you are. And at 45, after dealing with, you know, all these farmers for all these years, going and selling chemicals and selling fertilizer, like he knew who he was.
Yep. He didn't need
I think
to change
when he stepped into showbiz,
exact.
It was just a matter of shifting a few things around and just kind of being who he was, you know. That's
that,
what was
that
so
was
cool about him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fertilizer
so
business is a beautiful thing too, right? Because he's like, he can walk into any co-op, right, and be like, "I know you need what I'm selling."
Yeah.
The question is, do you want to buy it from me?
I bet there's some stories all over the South of him, you know,
in his role
of
stories of him as the salesman.
Hey, we'll end with your chainsaw stuff, but
details real quick.
I was, I was very glad to hear. I would not have known about Jerry's positions on race in the 70s. I just looked it up. I was just like, I just typed in something about that, and immediately it popped up some of his quotes and people saying Jerry was 30 years ahead of race. I thought that was noteworthy.
Yeah. He'd still get canceled now if you listen to everything he does.
Right.
Like, because, like, his jokes about women's liberation and stuff, they'd come after him pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah.
He wouldn't say them, but they'd come after him hard about it.
Right, yeah. Man, any of these comedians, you could, with a little historical revision, we'd just wipe them out.
You know, his whole big joke about how good his wife's got it?
Yeah. You don't want to mess with what mama's got, because she loves
it. Yeah, his whole thing is he looks at the women's liberation movement and what they're after, and then he talks about how gravy his wife has it.
Yeah.
And he's like, she don't want none of that shit.
Yeah. McCulloch chainsaws.
Oh, it was funny in the show that you're talking about, because you associating Clower's chainsaw from the famous Talking Chainsaw and your old man having a McCulloch. So our family chainsaw was a McCulloch, a yellow McCulloch.
Yep.
And it was just funny because it was like we understood later that like it took note of the fact that Marcel's chainsaw was the chainsaw we owned, which I don't know what the hell happened to that company.
Yeah,
but I was in the chainsaw tree business for a lot of years and never laid eyes on another McCulloch,
yeah,
as he puts it. Another thing you hit on is his use of detail. And he's like a very good, in that way, a very good technically proficient writer. Mm. And the thing I return to is his, like the coon hunting story, probably his most famous story, his description of the tree. Like if you listen carefully to his description of like how big the tree is, he's so efficient, but like how big the tree is, the person that's going to climb the tree, what their attitude is about tree climbing, when they take off their shoes, they don't just take off their shoes, they take off a pair of Brogan shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was like the poor working person's.
It told you who this guy was.
It was like the most functional, like poor. It'd be like if you were like when I was a kid, it'd be like he took off his hush puppies, right? And you'd be like, got it. Like,
yeah.
I know everything about that kid now. I know about that kid's parents' sensibilities. Like, he took off his tough skins. Okay. You'd be like, got it. Like, I know that person's parents. I grew up with that person. He takes off a pair of Brogan shoes. And then the thing too that he says, and I pointed this out, I told Corinne about this later, is you know, sweet gum's got smooth bark, kind of like a soft, smooth bark, and that he buries his toenails into the bark to start climbing it. It's like just this like beautiful build of like very telling details.
You know, as I said that, I was envisioning like trying to tell a coon hunting story like him. And I had the same thought about how efficient he was, even with detail. Because sometimes someone tells a story, and you're like, okay, come on. Mm. Speed it up. Like, too much, you know, there's too much detail. And he would give you just the right amount of detail in the places you needed it, and then skip.
Sure.
I mean, it's just natural. Like, I doubt he sat down and really thought about it much. It was just instinctual. But a lot of his, you know, comedy, the different routines were like under 2 minutes, like the chandelier one.
That is a perfect joke. The chandelier story. Like
that's like a minute and 50 seconds.
Yeah. No one really likes to hear someone break down a joke and tell you why it's funny. But I love that he stands up. He's like, well, no one could spell chandelier anyway. So why are we doing this? And you're like, haha, that's funny. And also no one could play this chandelier. Yeah. And then as a listener, you're like, huh, what? And then the punchline, I'd much rather spend the money on getting some lights in here. Like, yeah, it's perfect.
And then as you heard from John Newman, that
actually happened word for word.
That
basically
was one of the stories that just like straight up happened. And Jerry just told it, you know, which is pretty amazing. Now, what I hope this does is everybody can go find some Jerry Clower. It would be hard. I think it would be hard for anybody to listen to that and not find some bit of enjoyment. Sure. I mean,
well,
you know,
I've seen it happen.
Okay.
Every person that I, over the years, every person that like we travel with on the crew, I've subjected them to Clower. Most of them get something out of it. I've seen something where it just is like,
this,
yeah.
No connection.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Shut down.
I watch them.
They probably
I watch them listen.
Hoof trimmers on the internet.
I watch them listen and I'm like,
is that type?
I'm like,
person?
It really, this really, like, no part of this. I do think you have to have some connection to, I think you have to have some connection to rural life.
No, you just got to be a cold person if you can't derive some joy.
I was at
cold blood running through your veins.
Yeah.
The pheasants forever, quail forever deal talking a couple weeks ago. And over, I had a bunch of little talks on the stage there. And over again, people would be like, well, any tips for getting first time hunters into. And it's kind of like this Jerry Clower thing. Like, I don't understand how you couldn't like it. And for me, upland bird hunting is the same way. I'm like, lots of exercise, beautiful country, dogs doing their dog thing, doing the thing that they're made to do. And my success rate in taking first time upland bird hunters out who like really want to go again is next to zero.
Cold. It's like,
walked all over the damn place and shot my gun once.
Jerry, they're like, and I got
Jerry Clower was a big quail hunter, man.
Mm.
We don't have time to get into it, but he said something that I thought was great detail. I don't think I brought it up in the episode, but when in the story of when he had to shoot Uncle Versey's mule, when he had to put it down, he went to Uncle Versey's and said, "Hey, we're gonna hunt on your property." And Uncle Versey goes, "Oh, that's great. There's 7 or 8 coveys between here and the road." I thought that was that's something somebody would say.
I know you're trying to wrap it up. That was another running joke with me and my friends in just like teenage years, is dealing with landowners and trying to get permissions. It was a joke where it's like only people that do that would get how receptive. When he goes to get permission, "Oh, I'm so glad you come out and hunt my place."
God, like, bless
only
you, son.
Like only someone who's like dealt with like permissions all the time would find it funny that like Jerry goes to get permission and the guy's like, "So glad you're here."
Yeah.
To hunt my
yeah.
We've been saving them for you. Yeah,
that's a great. You're doing me a service.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
Man, there's so many jewels inside of that. And so it's been a lot of fun. Thank you guys for being on the Bear Grease Render.
Oh, it was great. Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, I hope the original crew doesn't have too much of a problem.
No,
this
is a lot better. Yeah. It's a lot better
than anything y'all would like to say.
A lot better than the pork rinds?
What's that?
To the pork rinds?
The original crew? Pork rinds. The cracklins.
The cracklins?
Here's how to do it right, boys.
Yeah.
And lady.
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/grease today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/grease. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup.
Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.